Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Finals Countdown series, which is, as always, brought to you by MedTalks. Now in this series, we're providing all of you wonderful medical students, in other words, the future of our healthcare systems, with short, succinct and super useful revision talks for all of your upcoming exams and generally for life beyond as junior doctors. We're currently in the gastroenterology section, and in the last episode, we talked all about constipation as part of our altered bowel habits episodes. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about the opposite side.
But before we get diarrhea. On to talk about that, I'd just like to mention the sponsors of this episode.
And this episode is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. And that's help as in H-E-L-P. And guys, for all of you listeners who are medical students and are feeling stressed with revision and upcoming exams, sometimes this can get quite overwhelming, and we have all been there. If you feel like things are getting a bit much for you, then BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You can talk to a therapist in a completely private and online environment at your own convenience. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to help that may not be available in your area. And all you have to do is just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then they can get you matched with the therapist in just under 48 hours. After this, you then schedule a secure video and phone session. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages and everything you share is absolutely and completely confidential. You can also request a new therapist at no additional charge anytime. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And just to make things even better, there is a special offer to all of you MedTalks listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp by entering the URL betterhelp.com/medtalks. That's betterhelp.com/medtalks. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. So, let's go through what diarrhea is. Always a lovely topic. Now, there's no universally agreed definition for diarrhea, but the British Society of Gastroenterology has defined it as the abnormal passage of loose or liquid stools more than 3 times daily and or a volume of stool greater than 200 grams a day. Now, the first part of the definition is probably more commonly used because we don't typically tend to weigh at the stool that we pass. Acute diarrhea is defined as lasting less than 4 weeks, and chronic diarrhea is defined as lasting more than 4 weeks. And in this talk, I'll be going through acute, and then I'll be touching on chronic. In terms of the causes of acute diarrhea, well, as you would have probably guessed, infections are the most common causes. Most often it's viral, so things like norovirus, rotavirus. Norovirus is the most common cause of sporadic outbreaks of gastroenteritis, which affects all age groups. Clostridium difficile, so C. diff, is a very common cause of infectious diarrhea in older people, especially ones who have been in hospital or who have taken antibiotics. And then some infections can present with bloody diarrhea, such as Campylobacter jejuni, Salmonella, E. coli 0157, which can actually lead to hemolytic uremic syndrome, Shigella, Entamoeba, Schistosomiasis, and many others. Medications can also be associated with diarrhea, such as antibiotics, allopurinol, colchicine, digoxin, magnesium-containing antacids, metformin, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, NSAIDs, PPIs, SSRIs, statins, thyroxine, lots of different medications can cause diarrhea. Also, patients who have constipation may develop overflow diarrhea, and what this is there's severe constipation, which leads to blockage in the bowel. And as a result of this, the bowel begins to leak out watery stools, which passes around the stool. And the leakage can soil underwear and it can appear like diarrhea. And it's termed as overflow diarrhea, even though it's caused by constipation. And a few other causes just to mention include anxiety, acute appendicitis, and intestinal ischemia. Acute diarrhea may be an early presentation of a chronic disease, such as inflammatory bowel disease. Okay, Now let's look at how we're going to assess a patient who presents with diarrhea. So firstly, we need to take a thorough history. So the quantity of stools that they're passing, frequency, severity, and the character. So is it watery? Does it contain blood or mucus? Is it fatty? We also need to always, as always, exclude red flags. So any blood in the stool, any recent hospital treatment or antibiotic treatment, do they have persistent vomiting? Are they experiencing weight loss? Is there painless, watery, high volume diarrhea? And this will cause patients to be at increased risk of dehydration. Are they having nocturnal symptoms which are disturbing sleep? When we're taking the history, we always need to keep in mind what the potential cause could be. So could it be infection? Has a patient had a fever? Or have they had recent travel abroad? Have they come in contact with another person with diarrhea? Or have they eaten out or takeaway that could lead to possible food poisoning? Think about any medications they've been on, such as metformin or antibiotics. Are they stressed or anxious? Are there any other features that might suggest appendicitis, such as right iliac fossa pain? Have they had any recent radiotherapy? Or are there any cardiovascular risk factors for an intestinal ischemia? So always have the causes in the back of your mind. Then we need to assess for the complications of diarrhea, and the main one we worry about is dehydration. So I'll split the clinical features of dehydration into mild, moderate, and severe. Mild dehydration may present with anorexia, nausea, lightheadedness, postural hypotension. It may also have no signs. Moderate dehydration may present with tiredness, dizziness, muscle cramps. Patients may have a dry tongue, or their eyes may be sunken. They may have reduced skin turgor, again, postural hypotension, maybe tachycardic and oliguric, so producing less urine. And then the worst is severe dehydration, where patients might be confused. They might be in shock with a tachycardia and a hypotension, so systolic blood pressure less than 90. There may be weakness, profound apathy, oliguria or anuria, which is basically producing no urine at all. As always, we need to consider any comorbidities which may increase risk of complications, so diabetes, chronic kidney disease, immunodeficiencies, and we should consider a rectal examination, especially in people of 58 years of age or older. There may be fecal loading in the rectum that's causing overflow diarrhea, or we may feel a mass suggestive of a colorectal malignancy, so that's something to bear in mind. Now moving on to the investigations, not always necessary for patients who present with acute diarrhea, but the ones we definitely want to do would be a stool specimen, so looking for any bacteria that grow in the stool, such as Campylobacter, Shigella, E. coli. So we send a stool specimen for culture and sensitivity, especially if the patient is unwell, immunocompromised, or the underlying cause is uncertain, or the diarrhea is persistent. We also want to do some blood tests, so a full blood count, look at the CRP, so infection markers, and because we're worried about dehydration, we want to make sure the patient's renal function is stable, so we do urea and electrolytes to make sure the patient's not gone into an acute renal failure as a result of dehydration, so that would be a pre-renal injury. And then in terms of management, well, most of the time it's supportive, so making sure we are addressing any dehydration by encouraging patients to increase their oral intake, or we can also give them intravenous fluids and making sure they're not fluid deplete and reversing any electrolyte depletions as well. The underlying cause may require specific treatment, so for example, a C. diff diarrhea may need antibiotics for 10 days, and that's usually vancomycin. Other bacteria that may be grown, such as Salmonella, Shigella, may need other antibiotics, and this would warrant a discussion with the antimicrobial and the microbiology consultant team, who would be best to advise on that. In terms of starting the anti-motility drugs like Imodium, we should always do that once we have a negative stool culture, because if we are stopping the passage of the stool and bacteria out of our systems, then these bacteria can build up, cause sepsis, and it can lead to a whole lot of complications. So that's when we would consider using anti-motility agents. In terms of hospital admissions or referral, if patients have vomiting, are unable to retain oral fluids, or they have features of severe dehydration or shock, then they need emergency admission. Other factors that may increase the need for admission would be older age, bloody diarrhea, abdominal pain and tenderness, which may be suggestive of appendicitis or another abdominal cause, an increased risk of poor outcomes, so if they have coexisting medical conditions like immunodeficiencies, diabetes, cardiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, if they're on immunosuppressants or steroids, then we would want to strongly consider hospital admission. If the diagnosis is uncertain or a chronic cause is suspected, then patients should be referred. And adults should be referred using the suspected cancer pathway referral, so an appointment within 2 weeks for colorectal cancer. And this is all based on the guidelines. If they are age 40 and over with unexplained weight loss and abdominal pain, or age 50 and over with unexplained rectal bleeding, or they're 60 and over with iron deficiency anemia or changes in their bowel habit, or tests to show occult blood in their feces. And that's the FIT test that we mentioned in the previous episodes. A suspected cancer pathway referral could be considered, so that's for an appointment within 2 weeks, for colorectal cancer in adults with a rectal or abdominal mass, or adults aged under 50 with rectal bleeding and any of the following unexplained symptoms or findings. So that's abdominal pain, change in bowel habit, weight loss, and iron deficiency anemia. In terms of complications, we've touched on a couple of them. So that's dehydration, electrolyte imbalance. That's what we most often see. Others to be aware of are reactive complications. So patients sometimes can get a reactive arthritis. They can get the hemolytic uremic syndrome, as I mentioned before, which is associated with the E. coli 015. And we will be covering this topic in a separate series, and that will be the nephrology series. But essentially, just a brief overview, it's a condition where the smaller blood vessels in the kidneys become damaged and inflamed, and it leads to a triad of microangiopathic hemolytic anemia, thrombocytopenia, so low platelet count, and acute kidney injury, and it's associated with the E. coli gastroenteritis. Hey guys, just a quick one. If you, like me, are iPad lovers and spend all of your productive time on your iPads making notes for exams or making notes for anything else, then I cannot recommend enough the paper-like screen protector. The number of times I've scratched my unprotected iPad screen after using different styluses or styli, but since having the paper-like screen protector, it's kept my screen extremely well shielded. Its nanodot surface technology provides a better tactile feel, increased stroke friction, and minimal light diffraction so that making art and taking notes on an iPad feels as natural as writing on paper. Made for the iPad and Apple Pencil, Paperlight delivers the unforgettable feeling of real paper into your digital workspace. To find out more about this wonderful creation, you can just head on over to their website by searching paperlight.com/medtalks, and I will leave this link in the episode description so you can have a look after you've listened to the episode. And if you are interested in purchasing a Paperlight screen protector, then please do enter the code MEDTALKS at the checkout page. And again, I will leave that all in the episode description. Okay, back to the episode. Right, so that's a quick overview of acute diarrhea. Now I'll move over to chronic diarrhea. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, that's defined as diarrhea lasting more than 4 weeks. So first things first, I'll just touch on the main causes of chronic diarrhea. So things to be aware about are irritable bowel syndrome. Then there are colonic causes, so diverticular disease, a colonic neoplasia, including colorectal cancer, inflammatory bowel disease, so Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, ischemic colitis, and then there's constipation with fecal impaction and overflow that I mentioned earlier. In the small bowel, celiac disease can cause diarrhea, Crohn's disease, other small bowel enteropathies, and lactose intolerance can cause it, radiation enteritis, so radiation exposure can lead to inflammation within the colon and the small bowel that can lead to diarrhea, and other rarer causes of and presentations of diarrhea include lymphoma. Pancreatic causes, so patients with chronic pancreatitis and cystic fibrosis can present with chronic diarrhea and also a pancreatic carcinoma. And then there are endocrine causes as well, such as hyperthyroidism, diabetes mellitus, hypoparathyroidism, Addison's disease, and hormone-secreting tumours. Patients may have chronic infections such as amoebiasis, cryptosporidium, Entamoeba histolytica, which may cause bloody diarrhea, recent antibiotic therapy, and C. diff infection. And previous surgery can also lead to chronic diarrhea, so post-gastrectomy, so that's removal of the stomach, resections of the ileum and the right colon can lead to diarrhea. Other causes to consider are medications, so laxatives, antibiotics, also digoxin can lead to diarrhea, metformin and NSAIDs, and cytotoxic medications such as chemotherapy. Alcohol, so diarrhea is quite common in alcohol abuse and also in immunodeficiency, including HIV. There may be factitious diarrhea, which can often be associated with an eating disorder. So in terms of symptoms and presentation, so Symptoms suggestive of organic disease includes a history of diarrhea of less than 3 months in duration, predominantly nocturnal or continuous as opposed to intermittent diarrhea, and also significant weight loss. The absence of these in associated with symptoms suggesting irritable bowel syndrome and a normal physical examination will suggest a functional bowel disturbance. Malabsorption is often colonic, inflammatory or secretory forms of diarrhea will typically present with liquid loose stools with blood or a mucus discharge. In terms of the assessment, well, we need to assess for any red flag indicators which might suggest a significant and serious pathology. So if there's unintentional unexplained weight loss, if there's rectal bleeding, if there's diarrhea more than 6 weeks, particularly in people over 60 years of age, if there's a strong family history of bowel cancer or even ovarian cancer, if there are any palpable abdominal or rectal masses, always we need to check for anemia and raised inflammatory markers which might indicate inflammatory bowel disease such as Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. But as always, we need to exclude other features, so we need to check for recent travel abroad, laxative use, we need to look for any other endocrine causes like thyrotoxicosis, diabetes, any features of pancreatic disease such as abdominal pain and steatorrhea. We should always do a digital rectal examination in people who have unexplained symptoms related to the lower GI tract, as long as this is acceptable to the person being examined, so we always have to ask for consent. And in terms of investigations, well, blood tests will be the starting point. So full blood count, we want to look for an anemia or a raised platelet count suggestive of inflammation. Do urea and electrolytes to check the renal function. Test for any malabsorption, so calcium, B12 and folate and iron studies. Thyroid function test, because thyrotoxicosis can cause chronic diarrhea. We want to check for CRP and ESR, because elevated levels of these might suggest inflammation and inflammatory bowel disease. Test for celiac disease, so the IgA tissue transglutaminase antibody or the IgA endomysial antibody, but the TGA is the first line. If we can feel an abdominal mass and we're suspecting ovarian cancer, then we do the tumor marker CA125. And if there's immunodeficiency is suspected, then HIV serology. As alluded to before, we want to do a stool culture to look for overcysts and parasites. And a fecal cal protector will help discriminate between IBS and inflammatory bowel disease under the age of 40. In terms of the referral criteria, the patients need an urgent 2-week wait referral if there are red flags, signs and symptoms present. So age 40 and over with unexplained weight loss and abdominal pain, refer. Age 50 and over with unexplained rectal bleeding, refer. Age 60 and over with iron deficiency anemia or changes in bowel habit or tests that show occult blood in the feces, refer. Consider a suspected cancer pathway referral for colorectal cancer in adults with a rectal abdominal mass, adults aged under 50 with rectal bleeding and any of the following unexplained symptoms or findings. So that's abdominal pain, a change in bowel habit, weight loss and iron deficiency anemia. Thus the referral criteria, other investigations that can be done in secondary care. So if features suggestive of malabsorption, then we can do small bowel biopsies, so duodenal biopsies to look for celiac, an endoscopy, barium swallow. We can do a CT scan of the pancreas, fecal elastase, again looking for causes of malabsorption. If there is a history of colonic or terminal ileal disease, then a flexible sigmoidoscopy or a colonoscopy can be done. And if those standard tests are unremarkable and the diarrhea is persistent, then 24 to 72 hour stool weights, stool osmolality, laxative screens, and measuring gut hormones will also be beneficial. And in terms of management, well, this would depend on the underlying cause. There may be a role for symptomatic treatment with anti-motility drugs such as loperamide, but only and only when the definite diagnosis has been made, and only when we know there is no contraindication to using the loperamide. And that's mainly with if there's an infection, because if we stop the motility of the bowel, then that will make the infection worse. Okay guys, so that brings me to the end of this talk on diarrhea. So I've gone through acute diarrhea, the causes, the assessment, how we manage it, and then we've touched on chronic diarrhea, again the causes, the referral criteria and investigations and management. I hope you found this episode useful. As always, please remember to give us your feedback. You can message us on Instagram, and our Instagram name is medtalks.uk, or you can email us, and our email is hellomedtalks@gmail.com. Feel free to ask us questions. Feel free to suggest topics that you'd like us to cover. And we look forward to bringing you lots more content. You can follow us on social media via Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And we've got plenty more episodes coming up in the gastroenterology section and in many other sections to come. So stay tuned. Share the episodes with your friends, your peers, and anyone else who may find them useful. And we will see you in the next one. Goodbye.